despite the snow, the Federal News Countdown rolls on. Some things are just more important than storms. And my friends counting down the top three federal news stories of the week this week are Jonathan Bruhl from the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Happy New Year. I think this is the first time I've seen you since January 1, so it's great to see you.
Good to be here.
Thank you for coming in today. Do you have any trouble finding a parking space?
Oh, no.
Oh, good. Okay, cool. And Rich Cooper of Catalyst Partners is also here and pinch hitting today for a friend of mine who couldn't make it in. So I appreciate your last minute.
Happy to be here.
Coming on board. And you brought your colleague and associate, Nick. And, Nick, it's great to see you as well. And did you help your dad pick the news stories for the countdown this week?
Yes.
You did? You did. What do you think about Secretary Napolitano changing the coding in the alert system, which we'll talk about more later in the show, from the colors to just a two-tiered system? Do you think that's a good idea, or is that something that maybe you'd like to see worked a little bit differently?
Go Steelers.
Knowing your dad, that I know exactly where that came from. It's great to see you, and thank you very much for being here today. And thanks for bringing him along, Rich. I'm a sucker
Happy
for a handsome
here.
Kid, so it's great to have him
he
along.
He favors his mom, thank God.
Yeah, so you said that right. We get started on the countdown, of course, with...
Number three!
Third most important federal news story of the week from Rich Cooper is headline, New York Muslims fear congressman's hearings could inflame Islamophobia. The new chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee is Peter King, and some folks are a little bit nervous about this, aren't they?
Yeah, in next month, which is quickly approaching here, Chairman King is going to be holding a number of hearings on what he's calling Islamic extremism. These hearings have certainly raised the blood pressure of a lot of different groups, civil liberties groups, religious groups, and this past Monday, the Post did a feature on where are some of the roots of maybe where Congressman King's efforts in these hearings are coming from. It chronicles a mosque up in his district that he had a very, very good relationship with. But then, after September 11th, some of the persons associated with the mosques made some rather, let's just say, inflammatory accusations that this may have been a Zionist plot and that Muslims could not have been behind this, etc. And needless to say, the relationship that Congressman King had with this particular mosque and some of the Muslim leaders in that community was fractured. And ever since then, ever since 9/11, Peter King has been one of the most forthright voices in looking at a lot of these types of issues. Obviously, he, being from New York, he had friends as well as constituents that were lost in the attacks. And he has not been shy about sort of calling out issues that he thinks need attention. When Secretary Napolitano first appeared before the House Homeland Committee, he really upbraided her, the fact that the first strategic plan that he was getting from Secretary Napolitano never had the words terrorism in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ranking Member King basically said, are you taking your eye off the ball? This is really serious.
Yeah.
And when he made the announcement after becoming chair of doing these hearings, you've had a lot of different media centers. I know the New York Times has been less than cordial with Chairman King, and Chairman King has returned the favor in some of the comments he's offered on them. But King has been very committed to exploring this type of issue because he points to some of the, you know, sad facts as to there have been radicalized Muslims within the U.S. that have engaged in certain types of attacks, whether that be the Times Square bomber or some of the other arrests that have been made over the past year. King is looking to focus a light on this. And again, it's raising a lot of blood pressure.
The story is headline: New York Muslims fear congressman's hearings could inflame Islamophobia. And as those hearings get underway, we'll have some highlights for you on in depth on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Jonathan, your story number three is by our senior internet editor Suzanne Kubota at federalnewsradio.com, and the headline is: Survey says citizen satisfaction plunges. And we thought we were kind of in a turnaround phase on this, where we were headed to the plus side as far as what citizens were starting to think of their interactions with the agencies. And so this survey kind of came out of left field, it seems to me.
Well, not entirely left field, Francis, but there was a drop last year in customer satisfaction. But this year it's actually plunged with another 5%, and it's now gotten to the point where it's the single biggest decline since the University of Michigan and the American Customer Satisfaction Index have been tracking this kind of information. And it really is suggesting some real disappointment and real problems with the way the public sees government performance and then in turn trust in government. A real problem.
The quote here from Forrest Morgeson I thought was very interesting because and it refers to the dashboards that are driving a lot of the information distribution that is supposed to be directed toward citizens. But Mr. Morgeson said there's certainly a difference between a large quantity of information and easily accessible and clear information. One of the things we found in the past with federal government is the amount of information is high, the clarity of that information, the accessibility of that information is often lacking with the federal government. That was one of the goals of all the dashboards, was to put this information in a more easily consumable, digestible format for somebody who's not a government wonk like all of us that are involved with this stuff on a daily basis. They put a lot of work into that, a lot of money, and it doesn't look like it's really achieved yet, at least, what the goal was.
Well, that's right, and the items you point to are two of the most significant elements in that survey. One has to do with the delivery of information, which is the question of how much clarity and how much accessibility there is for information, and that score went down over 5% as well. And the other has to do with the efficiency of which you use this information and the ease and timeliness, and that was down 5% as well, both significant drops year on year. And it means the public's growing increasingly frustrated with the performance and their view of the federal government.
As somebody who focuses on this for a living, on the performance of the agencies for a living, are they headed in the right direction and maybe public opinion hasn't caught up yet? Or are we still feeling our way through trying to improve the performance overall, do you think?
Well, we've got some places that have done spectacularly well and whose performance is not only improving but is substantially better than organizations in the private sector. And then you've got others that have got some real problems. And the challenge in the government, and Morgeson at the release of this information explained it pretty neatly, said a lot of the functions of the federal government are like going to the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
People don't approach that with a lot of enthusiasm or a view it's going to be a fun experience.
That's right.
But to then come away with an even deeper sense of disappointment makes it a real problem to run these programs effectively and, again, to maintain some trust in government, which is terribly important.
I have a question. As you look at this survey, do you think as more and more agencies and governments start to embrace social media tools that allow information to get out there and allow citizens to immediately respond, my hunch is that this number is going to continue to stay negative if they go ahead and use those tools, because people immediately can give feedback, whether, you know, schools are canceled or the road's not been plowed or something along those lines. Do you think social media will continue to drive these numbers in a negative way? Or?
No, in fact, I think the evidence is just the opposite. The internet experience is some of the best for the public.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can get it anytime they want, and it's usually up to date, and the customer sat people have measured phone information, phone service, in-person service, all different types, and internet service rates very high. And in terms of the cost benefit ratio it reaches a much larger audience at a much reduced cost.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can have a complete set of information out there that people can work through. So it's actually a strong element of what they can do to address this problem.
Jonathan Brule's story number 3 in the countdown this week is from federalnewsradio.com, headlined, Survey Says Citizen Satisfaction Plunges, and you can see that in all the stories we're counting down on the Federal News Countdown this week at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Countdown continues with story number 2 from Jonathan Brule and Rich Cooper next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Walking and weights works against diabetes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Being physically active along with eating right can help to control diabetes. But what kind of activity? At the Pennington Biomedical Research Center in Louisiana, researcher Timothy Church examined this in data on 262 people with type 2 diabetes. Some walked, some weight trained, and some did both. The program continued for 9 months. Church says skeletal muscle is critical to blood sugar control, and aerobic and resistance training likely benefits muscle in different ways.
The best way to keep that skeletal muscle chewing up as much blood sugar as possible throughout the day is the combination of walking and weightlifting.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Profile America, Friday, January 28th. Several generations of Americans have conducted their banking business while rarely going inside the actual structure of their bank or working with a human teller. Automatic teller machines, or ATMs, have become the focal point of most people's banking needs. The first ATM in the U.S. was installed in 1969 at Rockville Center, Long Island, by the Chemical Bank of New York City. By inserting a coded card, customers received a package envelope containing a set amount of cash. About 80% of U.S. households use ATMs. Across the nation, there are close to 6 billion ATM transactions each year. The average amount of cash involved is $99. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Regulations. President Obama has said he wants to cut what he's called dumb regulations. Well, how do you do that? The British government saved billions of dollars through a similar kind of initiative. We'll talk to the person who led that effort. Kind of cool. And feds in financial distress. How do you find them? Well, we'll find out this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the countdown this week, Jonathan Brula, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and Rich Cooper of Catalyst Partners, and we're up to...
Number two!
And the number two stories of the week, as selected by both guests, turn pretty much on the same topic, the State of the Union address by President Obama. I wanted to say at the beginning, we're operating on the countdown this week under the assumption that the situation with the snow and the federal government response to the snow is kind of automatically the number one story of the week, and everybody agrees with that, and so we're knocking that one off because we've covered that ad infinitum the last couple of days at federalnewsradio.com and a lot of resources about the snow and the response to it there. Jonathan, your story number two is from our executive editor, Jason Miller, on federalnewsradio.com, Obama to propose major government reorganization. And Rich, your story number two is from the Post, the headline, the Dan Ball story, Obama challenges the nation and Republicans. Jonathan, I'm especially interested to hear what you took away from the speech and what we've learned since about any specifics that we might be able to even speculate about when it comes to this reorganization, what it might look like and how it might work.
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? Because I think this language from the president about merging, consolidating, reorganizing caught a lot of people by surprise. Doesn't seem to be something that's been worked up ahead. They've got plans now, I guess, to move out and make something of it going forward, but there were no details. There was a catchy example provided by the president about fish and whether they were in salt water or fresh water or whether they were smoked. But the details aren't there yet, and we'll just have to see exactly what tact he takes.
Rich, the story that you picked was a challenge, and the president talked a little bit about bipartisanship and so on and so forth, and that's fine for a State of the Union speech. During his speech, some members, Darrell Issa was one of them. In fact, I think he sent out a press release even before the speech started about what was wrong with it based on the leak that was provided. What did you take away from this challenge notion?
The challenge came to it, and this echoes a point that was just mentioned. I was waiting to hear in the background a little old lady from the gallery saying, "Where's the beef? You know, where are the details associated with this?" Again, the example on consolidating and improving efficiency of government, you know, that's a great one. Okay. And you've got this nice, pithy, humorous example, but where are the details associated with this? You want to freeze budgets for 5 years. Where, you know, what are you going to freeze? And some things will, by nature of gravity, go up, and others, they will go down. Which ones are there going to be? Mm-hmm. And so the challenge is, and this is where there's a brinksmanship between the administration and now House Republicans, is, okay, we know we've got this economic house of cards that has all fallen apart. What are we going to cut? What's going to be streamlined? Mm-hmm. A group of Republicans put forward some rather drastic cuts that they proposed in about a week or so prior to the State of the Union. If that plan goes ahead, that would dramatically impact this area, because part of the cuts they're proposing is wiping out a lot of federal monies for Metro, mm-hmm. and the Dulles Rail Project. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who lives in this area doesn't want to see those monies go away. But the challenge we've got now is we've got to make some really, really hard choices. Mm-hmm. The Republicans and Democrats can agree that, you know, we can't keep spending. But what are you going to stop spending on? Mm-hmm. What are you going to cut spending on? And I thought in both the Congressman Ryan's remarks and the president's remarks, they may have got the rhetoric that they spoke to their respective constituencies, but now it comes down to details. And those are short and not very obvious to anybody right now.
A couple people at agencies have said to me since the speech, off the record, we did not expect details in the speech. That's not the occasion. But with something this dramatic that affects this many people that are this close, if nothing else geographically, to the President of the United States, Wednesday or Thursday would have been a good day for a rollout event to to have people from the White House come out and say, okay, this is what the President was talking about, and this is what it really means to you, if for no other reason than that the people at the agencies would have some sense of, am I going to be the one of the ones that's going? Am I going to be working for a different boss 6 months or a year or 2 years from now? What's the story exactly? And instead, there's kind of this perpetuation of question marks. It's like everybody's walking around in the cartoons with the question marks over their head.
Where's the beef?
Well, and reorganizations are well known as a huge distraction to mm-hmm. employees. They worry, as you were pointing out, who's their boss and where they're going to work. And there are any number of directions this reorganization could take. One would be to look at modernizing the structure of the government. Another is to go after duplicative programs. And there's been some work done by the Center for American Progress on food stamps, school lunch, and some of the women, infant, and children programs.
Mm-hmm.
The other proposal that you'll see from the Center for American Progress is in a report they have on competitiveness, and they're talking about setting up a Department of Business, Trade, and Technology. But again, those are all
How is that different than the Commerce Department?
Well,
I'm curious. I'm not in debate mode. I'm just wondering what the structural difference is.
Well, the Commerce Department has a whole range of activity, including Census, the Weather Bureau, so perhaps a much more business orientation than those organizations. But my point is that you've got a variety of very different directions you could take this.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't any clarity yet on which of those they have in mind or what we're going to see.
And the president missed a great opportunity. If he wanted to challenge Congress on, you know, efficiency and oversight and consolidation, for someone who works in the Homeland Security space, he stood in the very belly of the beast that is destroying, in many ways, Homeland Security. We've got over 120 different committees that have oversight over the Department of Homeland Security and other homeland programs and other federal agencies. There is no way that is remotely efficient or effective. No one denies that there shouldn't be some type of congressional oversight. But this is literally being nibbled to death by guppies when you have all these cross jurisdictions that are fighting against one another, giving contrary direction. How can you possibly have anything that could be remotely efficient in such an environment? The previous administration failed to do something on this. Speaker Pelosi, when she came in, failed to do anything about this. The new administration, when they came in, continued to, you know, punt the ball and not deal anything with it. And sadly, we're seeing, you know, Speaker Boehner and the Republicans refuse to deal with this issue either. So I think there's an opportunity to for Congress to take a look at how can they improve their efficiency in operations, much as we could in the executive branch.
We're going to take a break and come back to this combination of stories. But when we do, Jonathan, I'd like to ask you, if I'm sitting in an agency and I'm one of these people with the question marks over my head in the air, what should I be thinking about, or is there anything I can do to kind of keep myself calm in light of kind of a lack of response about where these reorganizations and so on might happen? It's the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Rich Cooper and Jonathan Brewer, my guests, and we'll be back in a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. Despite a nighttime curfew, violent protests continue to rock the streets of Cairo. NBC's Richard Engel says the day has been marked with violent clashes between police and demonstrators.
They've been fighting with police all day. The army has now been called in. The demonstrators don't want to confront the army. The army is a respected institution in this country. Police have failed to contain the protests.
Protesters are blamed for setting several fires in the capital city, including one at the headquarters of the nation's ruling party. Here at home, President Obama once again has called on lawmakers to tweak rather than repeal the health care law. Speaking to a convention of health care reform activists, Mr. Obama said he would fight efforts to repeal the law in its entirety. A report by the Commerce Department claiming that the economy isn't growing as quickly as projected, along with less than stellar earnings reports, has Wall Street in a broad sell-off. The Dow down 177, the Nasdaq down 70. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Sunday, from Hallmark Hall of Fame. For over 50 years, one woman waited for her husband to return from war.
She goes down to the station. She waits.
I always took Valentine's Day off to come here.
Now, an assignment to tell the story.
She never gave up on love.
Helps a reporter to find a love of her own.
You're falling for her grandson.
Jennifer Love Hewitt and Betty White.
I don't believe in giving up on things.
From Hallmark Hall of Fame, The Lost Valentine. Sunday, only CBS.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq.
He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Your eye is the model for a new camera that might allow higher quality images from small devices like your iPod. The camera captures light on a curved surface rather than the flat photodetectors in today's commercial digital cameras. John Rogers, a University of Illinois engineer, says since light curves as it enters a camera, this is more natural and eliminates complex lensing.
If you want to take out a lot of the bulk and the cost and the weight from the lenses, you can do that and retain spectacular image quality by adding curvature.
But while mimicking nature's eyes enhances static images,
we couldn't find any example of a living organism that has the kind of widely adjustable zoom that a conventional off-the-shelf digital camera has.
So Rogers engineered a hydraulic system that allows his photo detector to change its curvature to match changing images during zooming. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Profile America, Friday, January 28th. Several generations of Americans have conducted their banking business while rarely going inside the actual structure of their bank or working with a human teller. Automatic teller machines, or ATMs, have become the focal point of most people's banking needs. The first ATM in the U.S. was installed in 1969 at Rockville Center, Long Island, by the Chemical Bank of New York City. By inserting a coded card, customers received a package envelope containing a set amount of cash. About 80% of U.S. households use ATMs. Across the nation, there are close to 6 billion ATM transactions each year. The average amount of cash involved is $99. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Plan now to attend the Federal Senior Management Conference, the preeminent conference for federal senior managers, on April 10th through the 13th in beautiful Cambridge, Maryland. Presented by Fed Insider, FSMC is presented for government by government, with registration open only to government employees. Together with your peers, explore ways to execute the administration's newest policy initiatives to forward the business of government. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the top three Federal News Stories of the Week, as chosen by Jonathan Bruhl of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Rich Cooper of Catalyst Partners. And we're sticking with our story number two, both of them revolving around the State of the Union address. Jonathan's story number two is from federalnewsradio.com under the headline, Obama to Propose Major Government Reorganization. And Rich Cooper's story number two, Obama Challenges the Nation and Republicans. And all the stories that we're counting down today are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, so you can go read them anytime you want. Jonathan, before the break, we were talking about this reorganization that the president proposed. It did kind of catch people off guard. Nobody really had a sense that it was coming. We learned a little bit on Monday about the possibility that he would call for a freeze of discretionary spending for 5 years. But this major reorg was not really known about, to my knowledge, until the text of the speech was leaked on Tuesday afternoon. If I'm sitting in an agency and I listen to the speech, and right now, as we talked about in the last segment, the speech is really all we have to go off. What's the next step? Am I just in wait-and-see mode and just kind of sitting on my hands figuring out whatever they're going to say next?
Well, I think the smart execs are not going to sit in their hands. And the fact, perhaps, that the president has not laid out the details presents an opportunity for folks to step up and offer some suggestions, help them figure out where the moves might be. Because done properly, a reorg can be very helpful in giving employees and the public a clearer understanding of an agency's mission, and that can lead to stronger morale and much better customer service. And there's no question that we've got this coming fiscal crisis, which is going to require the government to make some adjustments. And so, again, weighing in on that in a way that helps match up both objectives at the same time could be a very smart way to proceed.
Mm-hmm. I want to get both of your input on one element of this speech. He talked a lot about technology. And I've spoken on the air to a number of IT people, CIOs and so forth in government, on the air and off the air. And we have on all of our shows about how front and center he put technology in this speech. But specifically as non-IT people, Rich, I'll start with you. What was your sense of, what did you take away from that technology piece and all of that conversation about technology as a potential problem solver in this speech?
I liked what I heard him talk about creating a new generation of Americans that would be versed in the science, technology, engineering, all of those arenas. Because very frankly, our output in this country doesn't compare to what China and India and others are producing. So if we're going to remain a top-tier country, we have to have people to do that. I was glad to hear the president talk about those things. But when he talks about the Sputnik moment, and it's a great analogy to use because that really did wake America up out of its doldrums to start moving to deal with what was then a Soviet threat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The challenge I have with the Sputnik moment analogy is look at what was created out of Sputnik and NASA, and look at where NASA's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
We are on the eve of parking shuttles permanently. We will not be able to access a space station that we as American taxpayers paid for. We'll have to buy a seat on a Russian vehicle. And NASA itself is going to have to go through traumatic layoffs at a number of its centers because we're not going to be flying shuttles. And while we're moving to this new commercial piece, we're not going to have as many people. It's great to be able to talk about wanting kids to go into science, technology, and engineering, but where are they going to go? Particularly when you're going to have, you know, dramatic layoffs in Texas and Florida and other places where there's some NASA centers. So they've got to start to answer this question, where are all of these jobs?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's what both sides of the aisle are dealing with. So we have to definitively answer, where are those jobs?
Mm-hmm.
It was easy for an Eisenhower and a Kennedy to be able to show where the jobs were because of where investments are going. We don't have that luxury here right now, given our economic situation.
Mm-hmm.
So where are the jobs in these arena? And it's not all just making solar panels, and it's not just green technology. It's got to be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's cybersecurity. But again, there's got to be more than that. If we are going to create this generation, they have to have something to do. That's what I thought was missing in that piece.
But Francis, my take's a little different, or it's a different angle on that. And I sensed that the president was looking at this question of technology in terms of closing the IT gap that the government itself is facing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Government needs to modernize. It needs to catch up with the private sector. And it needs to adopt a lot of commercial best practices in areas like supply chain, analytics, moving to the cloud. And used properly, technology is going to be one of the biggest enablers this president can use to cut costs and improve performance in government.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the internet question earlier, and move ideas, all these things around a lot more quickly using technology. So I think he's on to something there, and is now seeing what a role it can play, at least within the government. To solve his fiscal problems and help improve performance.
My fear with the technology, the way that he presented technology as a solution to a lot of problems, was that he might have created an unfair expectation among citizens who aren't paying attention to this stuff on a regular basis and who are just dipping in for a little sample at the State of the Union. And might come away with the perception that the president was saying, we have these problems in government, we're just going to sprinkle a little bit of technology on it, and everything will be okay, it'll clear everything up. I don't...
Were it that easy? No, you've got to be real smart about changing the business models and the way programs operate You simply don't automate the old ways of doing business.
Yeah.
You do it in a new way and use technology to deliver service and move information in a much more effective fashion. So there's going to be a lot of heavy lifting to make that happen.
And I didn't get a sense that that's what he was trying to portray, but I think I could also see on the other side of the fence where somebody could come away with that misconception.
We both have talked about the shortness of details on this arena. And so that's open to interpretation. And when we get back to the efficiency piece, he's created this chief technology officer within the federal sphere. Okay, that's great. That's wonderful. But that person has no real authority of which to deal with budgets, to start to streamline some of what could be procurements, what could be operations, what could be delivery of services, whatever those things are. I mean, the president used it. He had a great example, again, when he talked about the efficiency and streamlining some things. But again, if he's going to do these things, he's got to lay out some details on his blueprints on how you're going to do that. Are you going to give your CTO the authority to grab some of the federal agencies by the scruff of their necks and say, no, you're not going to go ahead and do that. You're going to do a cost sharing or you're going to do a joint procurement with. Right now, those authorities don't exist. And I'm not sure whether there are people up on the Hill that want to grant those things. It's going to be a great debate to see unfold, but it's one of the things that was left open to interpretation via his remarks.
Rich Cooper's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week and Jonathan Bruhl's number two story both revolve around the president's State of the Union address. Rich's story number two is from The Post, Obama Challenges the Nation and Republicans by Dan Balls. And Jonathan's story number two is from Jason Miller here at federalnewsradio.com, Obama to Propose Major Government Reorganization. Story number one from each of my guests right around the corner on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me, 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
David Blumenthal, the National Coordinator for Health IT.
The health IT sector is short of trained professionals. So we've created a nationwide health information technology training program. 84 community colleges are receiving support to train health IT professionals. This year we're going to graduate 3,400, and we hope annually thereafter to graduate 10,000 a year until we reach a total of 40,000.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with Jonathan Bruhl and Rich Cooper, and we're up to
#1.
Most important federal news story of the week, according to Jonathan Bruhl, is also a twist on the State of the Union address, and the headline is official says Obama to call for 5-year spending freeze, which he did in the State of the Union address. It sounded good. The reality of it is that it's not a tremendous piece of the federal budget overall.
No, not at all. But I guess I use this story as much as a placeholder, because what I'm really aiming at is the question of the fiscal mess.
Mm-hmm.
because within 24 hours, the Congressional Budget Office came out with its forecast, and they say we're going up to a $1.5 trillion deficit. The structural deficit still remains in the $500 billion a year range. So the budget gap is widening. It's not going to correct itself, even with a growing economy. And so having the president at least address that in the State of the Union, it seemed to me, is very significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it indicates an opening here that people are starting to take a look at these matters. I am anxious to see what the budget's like in a couple weeks when that comes out, to see really whether what the details of that are going to look like. But you've got that opening by the president. You've got some interest on the Hill. You've got the bipartisan blueprint that folks on the Hill are starting to work with. People like Senator Warner are taking this issue on as well. He's leading a group that's actually going to start drafting some legislation built on the Deficit Commission recommendations. So the story here to me is the implications for federal managers and the federal government. And it is that the routine budget exercises are over. We're in for some tough medicine from the president, from the Hill. I'm not sure where, but, mm-hmm. you know, this is beginning to bite. And, again, it's not the kind of situation where people are going to sit back and think it's going to pass by. This is going to start cutting in.
Rich, there are two schools of thought that I'm hearing and reading about what potentially could happen when it comes to Congress getting serious about the financial situation that we're in. And as somebody, you pay a lot of attention to what's going on in the Hill. So I want you to weigh in on this. One school of thought is that some of the old bulls that have been watching this for a long time and have been the canaries in the mine are leaving now. Senator Gregg is gone. He is back in New Hampshire. Senator Conrad has announced that he's leaving. So there, your chairman and ranking member for the last however long of the Senate Budget Committee will both be gone within 2 years. And there are a number of other people. Senator Dorgan talked about the budget situation and deficits for a while when he was in Congress. He's gone now. A lot of these folks are leaving on both sides of the aisle. There's a school of thought that says that that's good because they were not necessarily part of the problem themselves, but were party to it. They were at least around as it was happening. And then there's another school of thought that says that's a shame that we're losing these people who are so well-versed and so experienced in the process. What are you seeing and hearing, and what's your sense of what the reality of either of those is?
What's interesting is when members declare that they're no longer going to run again and they no longer have to spend all of their time raising money, they all of a sudden feel freed to actually do the things that they were originally elected for. Legislate. Mm-hmm. And so since they don't have to, and I'll use the word pander, to particular constituencies, they're free in order to make some of those hard choices and are willing to take on some of that heat. And even though they may put themselves, you know, at the forefront of a lot of criticism there, they do find themselves freed to be able to act on some things that they might not otherwise. And so it's great that they're able to do that. You just wish that they had some of the courage to be able to do some of that before. But again, every member was looking to return and extend their tenure in office. The challenge that all of these people has, and again, this is on both sides, this is now a poker game of who's going to blink first when it starts to come to cutting discretionary spending, cutting some other major programs, making some of the very hard choices. Congressman Ryan talked the other night about becoming Greece, and we don't want to become that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to become that, but we're on a precipice that if we continue to go the way we're going, particularly with the new deficit numbers that came out this week, you know, we will be in that situation. And I find it absolutely sobering that we'd have this conversation about, you know, whether there's going to be any other spending on programs in the wake of the deficit announcement. How can you think of spending more? How much further deeper do you think we can dig this hole? It's got to stop. Who's going to blink first is going to be the political brinksmanship that we're going to see going on for the first 9 to 10 months before things shut down and everything is a 2012 campaign cycle.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Brule's story number one on the countdown is headlined Obama to call for 5-year spending freeze. You can find it on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All the stories we've counted down are on there as well. And that means we have only Rich Cooper's number one story of the week to cover. And we'll do that when the countdown continues in just a moment.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies, and when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-400-0861. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-400-0861. That's 1-800-400-0861.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
So what will the new terror alert system look like? The National Terrorism Advisory System will be implemented over the next 90 days. And under the system, DHS and other federal agencies will issue a formal detailed alert when the federal government receives information about specific or credible threats. They'll provide a concise summary of the potential threat, and they will provide actionable information that the government, businesses, and individuals can use. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the size of an aircraft hangar that can hold 4 C-130 military aircraft simultaneously? Airink can. Airink operates the largest commercial hangar in Oklahoma City. As an FAA Part 145 repair station, Airink's team delivers advanced special mission capabilities, reverse engineering of obsolete parts, along with aircraft modifications, avionics upgrades, systems integration, and more. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with Jonathan Brule, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and Rich Cooper of Catalyst Partners. And Rich, your number one story of the week is Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano's speech yesterday at George Washington University's Homeland Security Policy Institute. And coincidentally, we covered that in hour number one of the program today and have a video link posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. As somebody with a DHS background, what'd you think of this?
One, I was glad to hear a new speech about what's going on with the Homeland. I didn't think there was a whole lot of new to this, other than some of the other statistics that she offered as far as some of the border security measures and that are being in place, as well as some updates on some of the cybersecurity programs. That was great to hear, but there was some new content that she gave that really shows that the department, despite some of its other challenges, is maturing, is becoming no longer sort of the bumbling toddler, in that it is starting to get its knees locked and moving forward in a number of areas. So I was very happy to hear that. The news portion of this that everybody knew the day before was that the secretary finally ended the color-coded threat system that has been much maligned by, I think, just about everybody, and has put in what they're now calling sort of a two-tier alert system. So, again, you've got this whole maturation process that's going on, not just with DHS, but also in the larger Homeland Security environment as a whole. And that being, you know, the state, local, private sector, NGOs, everybody's starting to understand their roles and responsibilities.
Jonathan, did you take away that same sense that DHS is finally getting its organizational act together based on what the secretary talked about yesterday?
Well, I think that's the case, but it's certainly taken some time. Mm-hmm. And that's what's been most disappointing and what gives me pause with reorganizations. Is these things don't come quickly or easily. And takes quite a while before you begin to see the positive signs.
You're not the only person that has used DHS as the example or at least thought generator when it comes to President Obama's reorganization comments at the State of the Union the other night. If that's the idea of reorganizing agencies, people are saying maybe we won't realize such a tremendous amount of benefit out of it anyway.
Well, I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that. when the department was created, it was created as a reaction to something. And again, this was literally, this was creating in many ways a federal Frankenstein, to where you're going to stitch all of these other body organs together, hit it with a bolt of lightning and say, work, and make sure everything is perfect on day one. Well, it wasn't perfect day one, and it's still not perfect. And again, as the department continues to mature and you have the components start to integrate some of their programs, integrate some of their activities, you know, cross-pollinate with some of the people that are there, they're going to start to get better and better. Now, again, DHS isn't out of the woods. It still has a long way to go. And one thing that's of concern to people that I work with that are within my own company, as well as the association that I'm part of, goes to some of the industry outreach. There's a lot of great rhetoric that's being used by the secretary and others when it comes to engaging private sector. But I can say right now, what's going on with the private sector in the department is not necessarily being quite productive. In fact, I think we're regressing rather than progressing. A lot of outreach initiatives that the Science and Technology Directorate and CBP and ICE and even some of the FEMA stuff are all going away. And if you want to have this shared relationship and partnership that the secretary has, you have to make some investment in that, and you actually have to follow through. And that seems to be going by the wayside at the department in a number of areas. And the companies I work with, I know, are not alone in feeling that way. And it's some things that have got to be corrected at the department.
Gentlemen, there are always a lot more countdown items to talk about than there is time to talk about them. And I want to thank you both for coming in and being on the Federal News Countdown. Rich Cooper of Catalyst Partners, great to see you again. And thanks for bringing your partner in today and having him hook us up on the news stories. And Jonathan, thanks for being here today. Jonathan Brule from the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Federal News Countdown is every Friday at 2 o'clock on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. So we'll have a